is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report to Rio de Janeiro. G20 foreign ministers open a two-day meeting starting right now with the outlook bleak for progress on a thorny agenda of conflicts and crises from the Gaza and Ukraine wars to growing polarization. I welcome Evan Ellis, professor, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. The foreign minister meeting is an umbrella for us to go in many directions, having to do with conflict zones far away from Rio de Janeiro. But then again, they've come home to the Americas, as you will see. Evan, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this, Professor. Secretary of State Mr. Blinken is attending. So is Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Significantly, not Wang Yi of the People's Republic of China, the top diplomat as well as the foreign minister since the disappearance of the other foreign minister. Not Wang Yi, but there is controversy in all directions. Let's begin with the headlines. Lula da Silva, the president for the third time of Brazil, made intemperate remarks, according to, I'd say, fair-minded critics. Israel's statements on Brazil's Lula are unacceptable, says Foreign Minister of Brazil Vieira. The diplomatic spat between Brazil and Israel, writes Reuters, entered another day with Brazil's foreign minister calling Israel's response to comments made by President Lula da Silva unacceptable and untruthful. What did Lula da Silva say? He said that Israel's conduct in Gaza is Hitler's treatment of the Jews. Professor, a very good evening to you. Lula da Silva has been very careful in the first months of his presidency, concentrating on the Amazon, concentrating on meeting foreign dignitaries. His travels in Europe and Asia have been met with success. And now this remark, which is, to say the least, intemperate, a spat between Brazil and Israel. Is there, at this point, reason to believe that Lula da Silva did this on purpose, made this mistake to call attention to himself? Why would he step out of line so dramatically, knowing that there would be an immediate response? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, Lula's remarks probably were in a little bit of an excess of emotion coming after a meeting there on the eve of the G20 with Egypt's president al-Sisi. But the broader context, as you pointed out also, is that this conference, the G20, which is really Brazil's party to host this year. Brazil inherited the G20 leadership from India, who had it last year. But this is kind of like the big social get-together at the climax of the movie where there's lots to talk about, and all of the principals are in the room. And so with the exception of China's Wang Yi, as you pointed out, who wasn't there, you have Anthony Blinken, who has come down and who's going to be going next to Argentina. You have people like al-Sisi there. You have there is the every intent with Lula, who wants to play a major role for Brazil's foreign policy and show Brazil to be a world actor, to really use this to showcase his desired new role on the world stage, to talk about things like the Ukraine coming on the heels of the Munich Security Conference, to talk about things like what is going on across Latin America, to talk about things like Israel. And so in many ways, this spat over Lula's remarks probably really sabotages Brazil's ability to have a role in that. And the details itself were relatively understandable. Again, Lula made these intemperate remarks, although there are many different leaders around the world right now who have been expressing frustration, especially as we move toward the possible Israeli actions in Rafah, very, very crowded, especially before Ramadan. Israel's foreign minister, Israel Katz, had responded very badly to Lula's comment. He brought in the Israeli, the Brazilian ambassador in Israel. He took him to the old Holocaust memorial, Yad Vashem, as if to say, hey, this is what a Holocaust really is. Brazil's diplomats responded very, very negatively to that, especially after the foreign minister of Israel declared Lula persona non grata. And again, that obliged foreign minister of Brazil, Mario Vieira, to say it's unusual and revolting for a foreign minister to treat a head state this way. But as this kind of lover's quarrel goes around and around, probably the strategic bottom line is that Brazil's ability to make a significant difference in leading the G20 to talk about important global issues and show Brazil's leadership has been completely derailed.
I want to concentrate on one possibility. Brazil, BRICS, that's the B in BRICS. S is South Africa. And South Africa has been taken the lead at the International Court of Justice to accuse Israel of genocide. And that is continuing next week, I believe, as Israel will answer. It is a puzzle to me only because these are independent actors, Brazil and South Africa. At the same time, it looks like they're taking direction from the Russian and China part of the BRICS. I just leave that on the table. I'm not looking for a conspiracy. I'm just saying that it is odd that they want to compete in this extremely negative fashion, knowing that they're not welcome in many countries for making such remarks. We move on to what else is going on at the G20 besides Lula da Silva's intemperate remarks, and that is the gathering of foreign ministers who are also attending. Sergei Lavrov is present. Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, traveled first to Havana, then to Caracas, and then to Rio. To your understanding, Professor, the relationship between Moscow and Caracas, Moscow and Cuba, is it stronger than it has been? Is it waning in any fashion? Has it changed over these years of Russian conflict in Europe?
Well, the relationship has always been strong, John, and really, I when I look at Russia's engagement with the region, by contrast to, for example, China's engagement to the region, Russia's is concentrated on a series of what I call threat hosts, anti-U.S. populist states that are willing to allow Russia to essentially host threats and provocative types of cooperation, military action, and in statements. And that includes principally Venezuela, but also to a certain degree, Nicaragua and Cuba and sometimes Bolivia. And so, we can remember that this is actually Lavrov's ninth trip to Cuba. He went, as you pointed out, Cuba, Venezuela, and now Brazil. But just a couple months ago, also, Lavrov, again, trying to show Russia's non-isolation at the height of the Ukraine war, also came to the region, meeting basically with those same actors. To me, one of the things that's remarkable about this is how little of new agreements or new commitments actually occurred during Lavrov's first stop in Cuba. Cuba. They talked about being a true friend of Cuba. Very little was said in Cuba about the death of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny. But very, very little actually happened in the Cuba leg. Then there was the one-day stop in Venezuela. Again, very little actually happened in the Venezuelan leg, although there was a reminder that from the past, there are something like 340 different Russia-Venezuela agreements. And of course, it was interesting that Lavrov chose not to stop in Nicaragua, which has long been back to the 1979 Sandinista days of Daniel Ortega, Russia, one of Russia's key allies and a key recipient of military goods and military cooperation in the region. And then, of course, on to Brazil, where there'll probably be an uncomfortable series of looks exchanged between Lavrov and our Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, who is there. But I think what it shows is that Lavrov and Russia continue to engage in the region through these threat hosts and also through actors that are looking to be more important international players, such as Lula, Lavrov taking advantage of that. I would say that Russia's overall position has strengthened. I mean, because it is now advancing in the Ukraine, showing its ability to kind of hold on through sheer might. And it's also advanced to the degree that the actors with which it is its closest partners have become politically and economically stronger. Venezuela, in part, thanks to the partial lifting of U.S. sanctions by the Biden administration, Nicaragua through just its sheer survival, and certainly Brazil, who is the host of the event. And so, Russia, although it's not China in Latin America, Russia, as well as Iran, continues to be actors that present challenges to the U.S. as they look for opportunities in the region.
You're good to note that that Lavrov did not stop in Managua. That is a puzzle. There's no reason to believe Ortega's fallen out with Moscow, is there, Professor?
No, I think it may have just been the perception of Ortega's, I don't want to say irrelevance to the G20 and some of the other meetings. It may have been a perception of not wanting to undermine Russia's messaging just due to the very negative way in which Ortega is seen right now. There is the delicate issue that, of course, Russia has a strategic interest in its relationship with Panama, although it's not good. And this is a moment in which the Ortegas have just offered asylum to former Panamanian President Ricardo Martinelli. And so it may have been that Lavrov wanted to avoid that entire spat. But I'm sure the Ortegas noticed that when Lavrov was in Cuba, proclaiming Cuba to be, quote, the most important ally of Russia in Latin America, that the Ortegas were asking themselves, well, what about us?
We're traveling to Buenos Aires, anticipating the arrival in a few days of the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken. And also to note the Malvinas, the Falkland Islands, are back in the news. This is the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. I'm John Battle.